Welcome. You're listening to Raw Health Rebel Podcast with Lisa Strabak. It's time to disrupt the current view of health and return to the raw basics that true wellness comes from within. Have my first co-host, my friend Chris Roberts, joining me to interview Fermenting Fairy, who is known as Lauren Moness, on gut health and much more. We kick off with Lauren's incredible story on how she healed herself from Crohn's disease using fermented foods, and this was the catalyst to her hugely successful business. We explore the power of fermented foods and the difference between them and probiotics. We talk about histamine intolerances and how fermented foods can help those with autism. We talk about the collective coming of age, surrendering and rebuilding the new. And we chat through Lauren's move from California to Florida, making connections with like-minded friends and much, much more.
Thank you, Lauren, for coming on here. I'm really excited because this is the first time I've done a co-host. So Chris is obviously co-hosting, and this, your topic is really close to my heart because my daughter had health issues, and a lot of it started with healing her gut and sort of unraveling. You know, that was, I think, quite often the thing that wakes people up is the gut health. And I really am excited to speak to you. So yeah, it's exciting. And Chris, thank you for doing this with me as well.
Oh, you got it. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be a part of it.
So we're going to see how it goes. Lauren, you're kind of our guinea pig for how it works with the two of us doing this.
Okay, yeah, sure. I love it.
But I think you've spoken to Chris as well on Instagram, so a little bit. So
yeah, Lauren, I remember I wrote you when we were talking about Crow, how you were going to be going on there. And we talked about a little natural law. And I kind of gave...
I didn't know that was new.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you should be on Crow, right? Didn't I say that to you?
Well, we'll see. I have to bring some pretty package to the table and getting ready to put out some content. So it's definitely something that only a few researchers have covered in the past. And I think it's right up Crow in everyone's alley. So we'll see how that goes. Not my goal, but it would be pretty cool because, you know, when you're a part of that community and you kind of go through the tutelage of that podcast, it's definitely eye-opening and mind-opening. So
yeah. Oh my god, that's amazing that's you. Okay, so now I'm like piecing it together. Oh, that's so cool. Yeah,
so nice to meet you.
Yeah,
face to face here.
And you too, Lisa.
Yeah, it's lovely to meet you. Thank you so much. Do you know what? I know we sort of said we keep it fluid, and we've got some sort of various things you want to discuss with you. But I thought if you're happy to sort of kick off sharing your story, because I think it is so powerful that, you know, the body's ability to heal and your story, you know, from a condition which conventional medicine can't help with, really.
Yeah. Oh, not only can they not help with it, but they love to make it worse. So yeah, and I'm very grateful that somehow, you know, it was either my intuition or probably both, you know, the divine's path of leading me to where I am now. Because when I was in my mid-30s, I was really sick, and if I had gone down the other path of allopathic medicine, who knows where I'd be today. But I don't think it would be, you know, healthy or pretty, as we say. Like, it wouldn't be pretty where I am, because I think that's where a lot of people get, you know, go wrong. They get led down this path, and people say to me all the time, oh my god, my cousin died of Crohn's, or my aunt died of Crohn's. And I say to them, look, no, actually they died of the medication and the interventions. So, and I think that can be said for pretty much 99% of the sicknesses or the illnesses that people have. So anyway, so yeah, I was in my mid-30s and living, you know, a great life. I was engaged to a man that I thought I married, and was racing triathlons. So I was like, outwardly, I was really healthy. And I did at one point, I felt like I was thriving. And then I started getting sick and having lots of diarrhea. But I always attributed it to my triathlon training and all the garbage I was eating to get energy. And I'm sure some of that had to do with it. But I started getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And I really became a prisoner of my illness, like so many. So I couldn't, you know, I didn't want to leave my house. I was literally like in my mid-30s pooping in my pants. I was incontinent. I didn't know, like the message didn't get through to my head, to my body when I had to go to the bathroom. And so I never wanted to leave. And then that caused me, you know, a lot of tumultuous stuff happening in my engagement to, you know, my fiance at the time. And I didn't want to be social at all. I was scared to do anything and everything. I didn't want to go to work. I mean, I was just like locked in my house, really. Mm. And then I got the diagnosis. I went to the, finally gave in to getting a colonoscopy. And that I really put off for a long time because I never had any kind of operation, surgery, procedure. I was really clean up until that point. And it made me very nervous to go in and have a scope, you know, up me. So I put it off for a very long time until I couldn't anymore. I was so sick. I just couldn't. I felt like at times I was dying. So I did. I went to get a colonoscopy and the diagnosis of Crohn's came up and I was put on very heavy steroids, very heavy immune suppressors. I took them at the time of diagnosis. I was told that this would be a lifelong path for me. I'd have to take these medications for the rest of my life. And, you know, but don't worry about it because, you know, people with Crohn's can lead, you know, pretty average lifestyles. Like you can, you'll be in and out of hospitals. You'll have lots of doctor's appointments, but you can go to work. I mean, you can work. You can have friends, like, you know, like this is what I'm told, like it would be like an average life, you know? And I'm like, what? Like, what? Because I went from being healthy to this. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, what I did was I took the medication, felt, you know, somewhat like tiny bit better. I wasn't pooping in my pants as much as I was. But I decided to go to a bookstore, and this is just like a random thing that happened that was really like part of like the serendipity. I went to a bookstore and found this like 500, 600 page book that I have on my bookshelf right now. That, what is it? The Paleo Approach. So it's called the Paleo Approach. And for some reason, this little paragraph stood out. And I mean, it's like a paragraph that big, five sentences at most, stood out. And it said that fermented foods could be good for autoimmune diseases. And so I went to my local health food store and I got a jar of sauerkraut. And, you know, sauerkraut, I'm Jewish. So like we, you know, we're kind of familiar with like kraut on, mm-hmm. you know, hot dogs, but like it's not really kraut. So I was like, all right, well, I'll try like a healthy version of kraut. And this, like, the first bite was really like this kundalini awakening. Like I felt life through my body. And it was incredible. Like I knew at that moment that I was onto something. And that's when I started dabbling into gut health and fermented foods. I started making fermented foods at home. I read some books and went on YouTube and learned and threw out my first batch of sauerkraut. I chucked it. I threw it out in the garbage. I was so scared of it. You know, I was like, I cannot handle something that's been sitting on the counter for 7 days or 8 days. Cause you know, germ theory, I was all about germ theory. I was like really scared of microbes. Right. And here, like I made a second batch and I ate it and it just like within a day or two, I started having like formed stools and that was like really key for me. And that was it. I knew that I had to throw out my medications like ASAP, just threw them out. and continued on the path of fermented foods and gut health, and broke up with my fiance. That was a very, very good move on my part. That was a big stressor for me, which definitely contributed to the development of the inflammation. And here we are.
That's amazing. So literally within a few days, it had that much of a profound impact.
It did. Yeah, it did. And I have that with my customers too. They email me, they call me, they say, wait, I just took like a sip of kefir and I'm not bloated anymore. Is that like, did something else happen? Or is it really the kefir? Or, you know, the same thing with sauerkraut. Like I'm not constipated. I've been constipated for 40 years and I took a few bites and now I'm not, it's like, yes, it's immediate. Sometimes it can be immediate. And with me, it was immediate.
And for people listening, like this might seem like a bit of a silly question, but just to clarify, like a lot of people know about probiotics, you know, and you can buy probiotics everywhere, you know, nowadays. And, you know, and very well-known book, GAPS, the Gut and Psychology Syndrome book, goes on and on about probiotics. And that's one of the first books that I ever read, you know. So I got an indication of gut health, brain health connection. But how is probiotics that you get sort of from a shop different from fermented foods?
Yeah, wow. That's one of my favorite things to talk about, because there is such a huge difference. And, you know, the probiotic supplement industry is so, so big right now. I mean, I think it's like 40 billion right now. I mean, it's up there with big pharma, and there's no doubt that some major pharmaceutical companies are owning and buying up, acquiring these probiotic companies. So, you know, we have to be really careful about that, because anytime there's big cha-chings, there's big pharma is going to get their hands in it. So anyway, probiotic supplements, the microbes are bioengineered in a lab, usually GMO'd, patented. It's basically as far away from nature as you get. And most of the time your body doesn't even get anything, like any benefits. Now, if someone went from a very, very imbalanced gut to taking a probiotic supplement, they'll feel a difference right away, most likely, because you're going from a baseline state of ill health to ingesting something that might have a little bit of benefit. And then you might feel like slightly better, but long term, they're really not helpful and actually harmful to the body. And most of the time they're sitting on the shelf for a long time and they don't have any food. Microbes need food to eat. They need fiber. They need prebiotic fiber. And if they don't have that, they'll die. So a probiotic supplement usually doesn't have, I think there's one on the market that has a prebiotic shell, but I'm even a little wary about that. Most of them don't have food. And so they're sitting on a shelf for a week to a year. Are you getting those 80 billion? I don't think so. You're barely getting any. So fermented foods, on the other hand, and specifically wild fermented foods are, let's just take a head of cabbage, because I think most people are familiar with sauerkraut. So we take a head of cabbage that's grown in organic soil, organic regenerative soil, that in, you know, a teaspoon of that soil, you have several trillion microbes in just a teaspoon of that soil. And the cabbage is grown in that soil. And so within the skin of the cabbage and the cell walls of the cabbage, you have microbes, you have billions of microbes. And then you take that head of cabbage and you create a fermentation vessel. And then those billions multiply into trillions. And so basically when you eat that head of cabbage that's turned into sauerkraut, that's a wild fermentation. So you're getting literally nature. Yeah, like you're literally getting the microbes that are from the soil. They've just multiplied, they've transformed, and they transform the food into a whole different alchemical food. And then you eat it. And then that's like as close to nature as you get, as opposed to probiotic supplements, which are as far away from nature. It's made in a lab and GMO.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. And what can you tell us, you know, you obviously had such great success with the fermented foods. You know, you've now, you've made a whole business out of that, haven't you? And that's what you do now full time.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you tell us more about that? Can you tell us a bit more about that?
My business. Yeah. So we do, my business is Fermenting Fairy, and we do all wild ferments. So everything, we don't add any kind of starter. We don't add any lab derived probiotic. It's all from the fruits and the veggies. So for instance, my lemonade, it's a fermented lemonade, and we get the probiotics from ginger. So we take the entire root of ginger with the skin on it, because that's where the majority of microbes are. And we ferment that, and then we create a lemonade from it. As opposed to, let's say, like a yogurt, where you have milk, usually pasteurized milk, and then the yogurt maker has to put actual freeze-dried probiotics in it, whereas we're getting it straight from the ginger root, which came straight from the soil. So all of my products are wild fermented. They're all organic. They're all vegan, kosher. So, and absolutely no fillers, no preservatives. If I can't eat it, if I can't put it in my body, it doesn't go on the shelf. It doesn't go on the market. So it's got to be very clean, you know.
And do you like what? I really want to try it then for my daughter. Are you shipping internationally at the moment? Because she's still got some. She's had a lot of health, like serious health issues, and we've. She's come really far, but she's still got a little bit of gut dysbiosis. And I've been nervous to try fermented foods a little bit because she reacts to histamine, which I know you did an Instagram post about this. So there's so many questions that both of us want to ask you. So but I'm really keen to try your products on her, because I just think they look like they taste that, you know, that they're palatable as well for kids.
Children love. Yeah. And that's part of what we do, is making them delicious, you know, so that people of all ages can consume them. But yes, we do ship internationally. I'm just waiting. Like, the shipping costs are not agreeable to most people, unfortunately. So I'm trying to get together with DHL and different carriers that go international. And so we do ship. I'm just trying to get the shipping costs down for international people. I would love to because I get requests all the time, at least like two a day for shipping, like across the world. So
I'm not surprised, because it just looks amazing, and I haven't seen anything like that over here. So I really want to try it.
If you have a friend at an AP address, like a military base, we can ship to them for really cheap.
Oh, so really?
That's one way around it. Just, you know.
It's good to know the loopholes.
Yeah,
that's
friends
funny.
Somewhere in the military, and we can get you cheap ferments there.
Where there's a will, there's a way. I'm sure I can befriend someone on Instagram.
Yeah.
Someone.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So what did you do? Like, you obviously you've put your whole life into this. You know, that's a big change for you to go from what you did before to setting this up? And
I mean, it was a huge change. Like, I was in the medical field. I was an occupational therapist. I was actually working at a hospital for the last 7-8 years of my life. And thanks to the big thing, scandemic, that's happening right now, I quit. So as I was growing Fermenting Fairy, I was also working as an occupational therapist to support myself and to grow my company. But, it was a big change. I never really thought that I had the qualities, I guess you can say, of being an entrepreneur, because I can be a risk taker and I love adventure, but that's more like sport oriented. But I'm very careful with my life. Like, I'm very careful with my money and careful with like not making mistakes anywhere. And that's like the opposite of being an entrepreneur. So I've really had to shift my mindset. And I feel like it's just made me blossom so much more into like a full, like I've let go a lot. I've surrendered a lot in my life.
Lauren, let me say this, Lauren. So I've listened to you on Crow, and then I followed you, you know, for quite a while now. I think even before you went on Crow, I had seen some of your Instagram stories, and I started following you, and like you were getting into some natural law and stuff. But like, you see how in the stages of coming to age in ways where, like, I know that you were deep into yoga at one point, which is alchemy, which is the most primitive, but more, I think it's considered the most primitive form in that way. But I think it's actually more advanced than most people think, because it is self-reliant and it is terrain theory. It is the complete opposite of germ theory, and it builds self, you know, confidence and intuition. So it's practical. You could put it into place. And I think that during that stage of life, that was what in your like 20s, 30s, like,
yep.
Right.
20s. And young 30s. Yeah.
Where you're getting all of this download coming in, but you don't know what to do with it because the way things are not fitting this parameter. You know what I'm saying? Like there's the parameters of what you think you should be doing. And mm-hmm. I was going into the medical field that same way. But once you see that all of these things are hyper-focused symptoms, polarized symptoms, instead of, you know, taking it back that filter and just opening it up and seeing it for what it is, which is inconsistencies on a faulty base system. And it's dirty alchemy. When you see what you do is a complete process of the alchemical stage where you take the three parts and it's a three-part system. What pharmakia, what a lot of the supplement industry is, it's just taking one aspect of the alchemical transition. That's why even when you call alcohol a spirit, right? Mm-hmm. It's because that's one part of the three. And that's why whenever you drink that, your body's seeking, inherently, it's seeking the other two because it's an unfinished product. Just like with pharmaceuticals. They're unfinished products that are patches for symptoms instead of root cause, like through Ayurveda or through like the Gerson therapy or through like exact fermented foods, all of these other things that are like, they stand on legs. You don't have to be convinced, you know? Mm. So I just kind of wanted to add that in.
Yeah, no, I love that. Or homeopathy after.
So I just thought that I'd say that just because we get pulled off the tracks, and it's by design. There's cleverly placed bear traps everywhere to where when you're on the track and you're starting to get it, that you're like, okay, I guess it's over here. And then you land on this little landing pad when really you got to stay on the highway and not take the first exit sign off, you know?
Yeah. 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 And it's been interesting because, I was a yoga teacher, and I felt very gifted at that. And I felt like it was part of my path. But then through my dad, which is really interesting because you did mention this, he kept saying to me, like, when are you going to get a real job? And I've heard this numerous times throughout my life from him. And yoga was not considered a real job to him.
Right.
Even though I was thriving in it at one point. And so I thought, yeah, you're right. I need health insurance. Like I need to pay off my student loans. And you're right. Like I do need a real job, you know? And yet, so I went back to school and got an occupational therapy degree and then started working in a hospital. And I can't tell you how wrong it felt the entire time. It was so, and I made the best of it because I loved my patients and I knew I was helping them. But at the same time, I wasn't using my gifts. I was miserable. And it was the exact like veering off the path, you know?
Yeah. Sterile, blue lights, separate, you know, like not ever completing like an exercise and stretch, like a loosening and tightening of the loose ends. you know, that's what I like to say a lot is you loosen the tight ends and tighten the loose ends mentally and physically. And that's where you rest spiritually. That's where you find that little thing that we always chase, the thing we call it, peak level moments of life where you feel weightless, those types of things, or, experiences with, even you brought up Kundalini. I mean, that's what a lot of this stuff is chasing to get back to that moment of realizing that we're locked into the five senses and we have polarization or just like hyper focused on symptoms of like what we even call disease or conditions, which is funny because it's just a part of a process. Like so many things are just a part of a process and they make it seem like it's just this massive thing that you need to treat when really some of it is part of the healing process. Kind of like whenever you have a fever, it's because it's burning off bacteria. Like you need to kind of let that thing ride out, not suppress it over and over with medication. Yeah. It's part of the process.
Very true. Yep. It's all by design, isn't it? This whole thing, everything, us, the world, internally, externally, you know? So if we could just really surrender. I mean, that's the big thing for me is just letting go. And I tell a lot of people who I work with to, because I realized this, like when I was struggling with Crohn's, I realized that anytime I would put myself into a box because I was too afraid, because I was too sick, anytime that I would just say, all right, screw it, I'm going to go to my friend's house. You know, that was a big deal for me. Just going to a friend's house was a major deal because I didn't know what was going to happen, you know? So I just, screw it, I'm going to my friend's house. And then what do you know? Like, I wasn't sick anymore when I got to my friend's house. I was having fun. I was talking. I forgot I was sick. So it's like such a, I think it really, what life comes down to is surrender.
Yeah. Learning to let go. That's the, actually like the divine comedy is that once we become conscious, you're like, I got to figure this out. Where am I going? What's my purpose? How do successful people get successful? Okay. What was their path? Is that my path? Like, and you start comparing and contrasting and you get lost in transmission. Like during the journey, all you're trying to do, all people are trying to do is get a hold of themselves and maintain like this composure. But at the end of life, all you can literally do is let go because we all have to die. And it's just one of those uncomfortable realities for people. And a lot of it is like not even, you would think it'd be more open to kind of understand it from those perspectives. And that's why certain cultures have like a day of the dead, like, hey, we're talking about it. And then after today, we're not talking about it, you know? Yeah. And it's because this inherently people just kind of knew, openly known that this was, it's a bigger conversation. I don't even want to like touch too deep into it, but we might sign up for this place. And this place is kind of like the ground of illusion, Maya, where you get confused on when you make a material connection or a spiritual connection, because you're both. You're a soul within a vessel, and this vessel has to see it through physically, but you're not supposed to just get caught up in the material because you are part of this other thing that once a physical person dies, it either, you know, goes on, recycles in, elevates, who knows. But essentially what I've come to find is we get lost in either once someone has a spiritual connection and a lot of life is to suck you out of the spiritual connection, then that person just has to fight getting back to that spiritual connection and their whole life becomes that thing instead of living out their material life as well. And then so our society now is living out this just down in the roots of materialism, just like completely the dark side of it too, where it's, you know, corporate capital, consumerism, everything is available at one time. Nothing's in sync with nature, where things shouldn't be ready at every store right then because it's not even the season for it. and you can get food at any time, any place, sex, porn, just, and it's all about the finished result. Nothing is about the journey. So like sex is so polarized. All people care about is like the act of doing it and the finished result. Mm-hmm. When really, when you take it back far enough and you like look into yoga and how pranayama, the breath work, even like evolved through the practice, some of it was Raja Yoga, sitting in your half lotus or full lotus, keeping your spine straight and breathing until you kind of produced an endogenous experience with your spinal fluid. Or it was the breath work through sex. Mm. And it was more about staying connected with your partner. It wasn't, you know, people like to think it was all these positions, like, and that evolved into that, but the breath work came first. A lot of the depictions you'll see, like Shiva and Shakti, and Shiva sitting there with a straight spine in a lotus, and then Shakti's wrapped around him, like sitting on his lap, and their spines are completely straight, and they are literally like, you know, navel, you know, solar plexus, you know, everything is touching up to their mouth and eyes, and they're just looking into each other's eyes. And it was more about staying in that state of reaching samadhi, like the absolute oneness with God. It was more of a conduit to a higher state of being with your loved one than it just being about the act. See what I'm saying? Everything is just in the most degraded state, instead of seeing the journey and not just being polarized by symptoms like orgasm, quick hot food, fresh, which is weird enough because when you look into marketing, fresh is it's a sexual term, like for big ag, whenever a springer cow is ready to mate, they say fresh. So like, take it back far enough, everyone would realize that in a natural sense. But now it's on everything, like Subway, fresh, eat fresh. And like, we don't think about it like that, but our mind thinks about it like that inherently. It's really weird. Yeah.
So I think one thing, that this whole last year or 2 years now we're coming up to has given us the opportunity to get back to the journey that we really should be on in some ways. I think, you know, it's been a shit show in many ways, but there have been good things come out of it too. The great awakening.
No, for sure. Like I think that we really needed this, like, to be honest. It's, you know, I think the world needed this, and it's so necessary to dive deep into because you know, like, individually, a lot of us go through the dark night of the soul, but collectively we really haven't. And this is it, you know, and we need to have everything burned down to the ashes, and so that we can rebuild it. And we are rebuilding it. There are communities rebuilding right now. Mm. And it's really beautiful to watch and to be a part of. So I think, I mean, to me, the last 2 years, even though they've been, you know, really sad to watch, like, a lot of people have lost a lot. I think, like, spiritually, like, in evolving wise, it's the best thing that could ever have happened to us as a world.
It's given people the chance to really unite, because I do remember sort of thinking, not long before actually COVID, and I was chatting to my husband going, you know, oh, there are other homeopaths on the same page as me, and I'm sure other people think the same, but I wish we could all just somehow unite. And I'm like, you can't remember what you wish for, because it has, like, such diverse people that are sort of on the, in the alternative communities, or on the fringe, or into natural health, or, you know, it's like everyone's just come together, which has been great in some ways.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
Although it's more virtually, still, I'd like it to be slightly more in a physical sense. I think we're all quite scattered still, but there are pockets of people coming together in real life.
What's also fascinating about this time too is, like, I have come pretty close. So how I've met Lisa was through our friend Chad. And Chad followed me through when I was doing you know, podcasts like on Sam Tripoli's Tinfoil Hat podcast, which is a fairly big one. And I got into some other podcasts too, but he found me through Sam. And then we started talking a lot. And I seriously feel like I've known him my whole life. And then talking to Lisa, it feels like we've known each other for a long time. And what I'm getting at is she also has like people that she's networked with. Now everything is kind of coming together and it feels familiar. And I know that we go through these like shifts through the grand scheme of all of this, through the zodiacal clock, the sky clock and ages. And we're shifting through Pisces into Aquarius. And, you know, it's kind of like the fall of the man and the rise of the woman time. And I see a lot of like powerful women speaking up and standing whenever, honestly, there should be some men standing up too, doing shit like what you did, where you're like, I'm not gonna stand for this. Well, I'm standing, but not for this bullshit. And you essentially put your foot down, and it, you know, even whenever it became uncomfortable for those that have not done the work into this polarizing time. Because what sucks is like, you would have thought like people were on this path for real, because there's a lot of raw, like, you know, raw milk, right? Which is literally the antithesis of germ theory. It goes against pasteurization, right? Mm-hmm. But then when all this happened, then all these people are for germ theory all of a sudden, where they're like, mask up, and they're like, and hand sanitizing. And you would think like, hopefully it's just for the optics so they can keep their business because they have bills and stuff and families. But a lot of them don't even know. And I'm like, what did you think you were doing this whole time? You know, did you, or like yoga instructors masking up and being all about the mask, but then preaching about the breath being so strong and how, oh, it's like, hold on. So it's not just like we're breathing and woo woo. Like they figured this shit out a long time ago. And then in modern times, they figured out that you exhale like 80% of your toxic waste. And then when you look back at Spanish flu and you look at all that stuff and you start to compare and contrast things and you look into, Fritz, I forgot his name, but he did that book, Over the Rainbow, or The Invisible Rainbow is what it was called.
Oh, and it broke down. 5G.
Yeah. Well, about sonar back sonar. In, exactly. And how that attributed along with, I think, Tylenol coming out at the same time, suppressing the fever.
Mm-hmm.
And so people were just boiling inside. And then
I haven't read, what's this book? You've both read it. I haven't. I'm going to have to
put it. I think it's called the show notes. I don't want to misspeak. Hold on.
You have it.
Yeah.
The Invisible Rainbow.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll put a link to it.
Furstenberg.
Yeah. Furstenberg. Yeah. Arthur Furstenberg. Furstenberg.
Yeah.
And then you look into Rudolf Steiner and what he was breaking down Spanish flu, and then after, and even like 33rd degree Mason Manly P. Hall, you think, oh my God, this guy's a Luciferian. But then go look at some of his stuff where he's breaking down, like in 1923, he's putting out publications that were also peer reviewed at the time. You're totally going against germ theory, talking about all of the shit that we're going through right now. Same playbook.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting, like in the field, I'm sure you've noticed where you had like maybe these connections that dwindled because you really saw who was kind of faking the funk or really didn't understand what they thought they did. Like,
right.
I know Ayurvedic practitioners and I'm like, I don't even know if you know what you're talking about now. Like, honestly,
that's been the biggest shocker of this whole thing is, you know, that when I lived in LA, right now I live in Florida, thank God. But I lived in LA throughout the worst of it. And well, who knows what the worst of it, I mean, it could be even now, but anyway, I just moved to Florida 3 months ago. So I've been living in LA for the last,
I love your backyard, by the way.
Oh yeah.
It's like a sanctuary back there. You just reap the fruits of your bounty. You've got a bounty every time you go out there.
My mangoes and avocados. Oh my God.
Yeah.
But you know, I lived in LA and the health food stores were the worst. I mean, because I didn't wear a mask at all. And you know, ever since day one. And I was able to, although I got the cops called on me plenty of times, but I was able to go into like a Ralph's or, you know, like one of the conventional big stores. I had to put up like a big fight to do that, but at least I was able to go in and do my shopping. And but the health food stores, forget it. I mean, they had these big bouncers, you know, yeah, at the front door. And these were guys that were like 15 years old, you know, and they were, a lot of them were obese and not healthy themselves. And yet they're telling me, like, you know, to put on a mask and spray. Like they're out there. Their job basically is to spray all the carts with this, you know, terrible like chemicals. So the health food stores were just the worst. And that was the biggest surprise to me. Even friends who are Ayurvedic practitioners, you know, they got the jab, they're all about the mask, you know, they see me like defying all this and standing up and nope, can't be friends with her anymore. And I'm like,
what? Right. When they're the ones who change, that's what's the most interesting. Cause you like, people like to compare it obviously to Orwellian 1984 and all that stuff, but really like definitions are changing. They changed the vaccination definition to fit mRNA and all that stuff. I don't know if you guys saw that. And then also people that, you know, are like completely flipping the script on how they were. And it's not like a metamorphosis towards something positive. Yeah. It's more like they're burning bridges and they don't understand that nothing, just because this is a thing, it's forced choice. Every situation that really we kind of think we're choosing is a lot of it's forced choice. Like this whole system, how we buy things, like how we commute, all these things are forced choice. There's suppression of other things that these things are now onto us. And somehow they become our problem. Like we created these things. Mm-hmm. When really there was a narrative that was created, people accepted or didn't, or they started, you know, comparing and contrasting like a normal human being does with a Venn diagram that you learn in, you know, learn in middle school. You take the two circles and you overlap them and you have the Vesca Pisces, and then you know, cons and pros. And, you yeah. know, it's something that like is so rudimentary, yet people forgot, just like how people forgot things that have happened in the past, yet, you know, acting like it's never happened. You know, they forget the Cutter's incident where 40,000 people got injected with live polio. And at the same time, they also had DDT being, you know, openly sprayed everywhere saying, oh, it's safe for hand sanitizer. And then they have those literally infomercials where they're spraying babies and spraying families outside. And they're trying to convince people it shit's good. Yeah. And you're like, that's why it's never just one thing. There's always, when these things happen, it's always a few different things happening so that you can't really pinpoint what exactly killed the person. Mm. But they act like none of this stuff has ever happened. And when you point it out, it's like, yeah, but that was then. Yeah. And you're like, okay, well, you know,
yeah.
So what happens in 10 years from now, whenever all these books have been written, documenting it the whole time, and then now you finally come upon them and you're like, wow, I wish someone would have told me.
Completely. People do have such a, well, it's because everyone thinks we're so much more evolved now, isn't it? Even though it was only like actually in the scheme of things not long ago. One thing I'm really interested to know about is what life is like in Florida. Because I have to say, if I wasn't British with slight issues, I'd be like somewhere that I would be really on my radar right now to live in terms of climate.
So what, like, okay, so I moved to a place called St. Pete, Florida, St. Petersburg, and supposedly it's the blue dot out of a red state. So it's kind of like the Austin, you know, in Texas. And so, you know, I don't like to get political because to me, this is not a political issue, but unfortunately it turns out that it is politicized. So Florida's amazing. I mean, it's exactly how it should be. Like, it's exactly how the world should be. If there's going to be like a real pandemic, we know it's not, but if there were a real pandemic, Florida is how it should be, because there are plenty of people who wear masks. There are plenty of people who are jabbed. And yet nobody curses at each other. Nobody asks. I've never once, and I've lived here for 3 months, which isn't that long, but I've never once been asked if I've got the shot.
Wow.
Obviously I don't wear a mask. If I didn't wear it in LA, I'm certainly not wearing it here. And I mean, people even with masks on, when I go to the store, they're so smiley and they'll talk to me and we're like this far away from each other. It's like, it doesn't matter. It's all by choice. Like if I choose to do something, they're okay with it. And if they choose to do something, I'm okay with that. And that's really what it boils down to, is choice, medical freedom. If you're scared, you can still go to the store and wear a mask. If I'm not scared, I can still go to the store and not wear a mask, you know, and we can all be friends. And that's how it feels in Florida. It feels very friendly, very welcoming. It feels like nothing has ever happened, although people are walking around in masks. If it wasn't for the mask, there would be nothing. Like nothing has ever happened, because nobody ever really talks about it here. You know, I get together with my neighbors. There is no talk about what's happening in the world. It's just, you know, what do you want to barbecue? How about the weather? It's been really hot. Did you go to the springs? Life has moved on here in a way. And at the same time, when you watch the media, I don't, but my family does. And so they tell me what's on the news. Florida hospitals are, you know, right, like there's no, right. You can't get in, and it's like overburdened. The nurses are, you know, they're quitting because it's so hard. And like, really, I haven't talked to one person who's been sick. I haven't, like, it's just, it's all a lie. And yet the way I live in Florida is like, to each his own, you know, we just, we've gotten on with our life here.
That's really good. Yeah. I think, it always seems, I mean, obviously I'm not in the States, but just my perception of what I hear, Florida just seems like it's the one place that seemed pretty normal, you know, and then we've got you, Chris, in California, which is like, my perception is just like the worst. And then me in Britain, we just yo-yo from one extreme to the other. Like now it's all fine again, apart from the fuel crisis. But, you know, a lockdown and vaccine passports are like right around the corner again, you know, but right now no one's wearing masks. There's no restrictions on anything. It's completely... Some people choose to wear masks, right? It sounds a bit like Florida, but everything's open. It's completely in some ways normal, but it's not because it's not because they're consulting on the vaccine passports, which they've just rolled out in Wales and Scotland. I'm in England, so it's imminent. I think it's just because they went off on their summer holidays and they're back now, the government, from September. But it's like this really sort of weird, eerie calm before the storm. But as where you two, so we're kind of in the middle, Chris, California, me in the middle, and you.
That's so funny. Yeah. And I went from one extreme to the other. I went from LA, which is, you could not get worse than LA.
It's so weird too, to think that like they cracked down so hard on LA compared to like San Francisco, because it was all like New York, LA, and Seattle. And you would think like with all the homeless, right, in San Francisco, which it's, you think it's like, it's a peninsula, right? But it's like, you think about it, like it's surrounded by water. This thing's like an island, all these homeless on one spot with all these like people, you'd think that that would have been one of the places that they crack down on, because they usually do, you know, they've kind of had like a rough road. If you look into San Francisco and just been degrading, it's not like, not nearly what it was once, you know, not even like 10 years ago. But none of that was like, they weren't polarized articles about San Fran, but they were just cracking down so hard on LA and New York and Seattle and like a few other places too. But anyone that started to kind of like stand up and push back, then they were like, the cases are rising. And, you know, the rest of everyone that doesn't have critical thinking still just accepts it. Even, you know, so people right now, that's, I kind of thought that's where you were going, Lisa, was because right now, if you were to look into any type of thing online at all, it's like Florida this, Florida that, like there's all these things happening supposedly in Florida.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Probably not. or if it is, it's only in like Broward County where everything always happens, like every dark thing. You know?
Well, and it's because the governor here is really the only one that I see that's like blatantly standing up to, you know, the federal government. I mean, and he is blatant, like he will come out and say, you know, Fauci's a complete idiot, mm-hmm. you know, and Biden's a complete idiot. And in fact, I have a shirt that he made, or his team made, that says, "Don't Fauci my Florida." You know, it's like, it's so fantastic. Like, it's so fantastic. I don't care if he's red or blue. All I care is that there is a man in the public eye that is pulling things that like not many people would do. He's very brave, you know, and he's got balls. Finally, like a man in the public is actually standing up who has balls. And the governor here, DeSantis, does. So, and you can see it in the way that people live. It's, you know, there's freedom here. So.
Oh, go ahead.
So you're going to have a load of like a massive flux of all.
I know. Actually, yeah. I think didn't they just announce that the EU, people from the EU can now fly, or like coming up in November, I think the US is opening.
Only if you're double vaccinated.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere. Like, I'm stuck on this island for the like foreseeable future. That's like a boat like off of here.
It's okay. Honestly, I think we're going to have to brave the storm for the year, the rest of the year. And then, you know, when someone says something like this next thing I'm going to say, people go, "Oh, here we go." But honestly, I've looked into enough people that do this enough and have predictive things, not like to a T, but been like, things are about to get, you know, we're going to have Mars energy in this portion of the year. And then we're going to, you know. And supposedly after the first of the year, things are supposed to level out a little bit. I mean, so we'll see.
After what, the first of next year, did you say?
Yeah, this coming year, 2022, we're supposed to have a little bit of benefits from our labor of having to deal with all this crap. So.
Well, I actually do believe that. I do believe, I feel it coming, and I feel it happening even now, that we're starting the upswing. There's a lot of people, including myself, who are starting to create private member associations. Do you know about those?
You know what? This is interesting you've said this, because I'm involved in Health Freedom for Humanity. We're trying to set up the UK chapter. And that's how a PMA is going to be set up as PMA. So I've very loosely like come across it, but it's very, very unfamiliar, to like an unfamiliar concept, but I hear that there's.
And that's why I feel like things are really on the upswing, because there's a whole society being created right now of PMAs. And there's a whole database that's being created of PMAs. And so we're literally starting our own micro economy that will hopefully become the economy of, you know, of the world. And I'm turning my company into a PMA. So it's a private member association. And basically you take your business, and whatever business it is, it could be medical, it could be real estate, it could be anything, it could be food. Could be farming, whatever your business is, and you take it out of the public sphere and you put it into private. And so you basically don't have to follow any kind of jurisdiction. There's no laws, there's no rules. You and your members have an agreement that, as long as you're not committing evil, all is good. All is well.
Yeah. And actually, I went out for, do you know what? This sounds familiar to like common law. My friend, I went out for lunch on Sunday with some friends, and they were telling me, "Lisa, the way out of this is through common law." And they've been going to some common law talks in the UK and saying some similar stuff about it being, I haven't been on a course, so I need to really level up on this, but about, it's about being in the private domain. And even when you have your full name with your surname, you're sort of contracting with the government once you enter into that. So they were saying that the way out of this is kind of getting really up into this common law, which I think is similar to the concept of what you're talking about in the US. So yeah, that's exciting, because, you know, it's kind of playing them at their own game, really, just knowing their rights.
Yeah, exactly. That's, it's playing their game. It's making the, you know, I mean, that's how they're wealthy. That's how they've built so much wealth, because they all have PMAs themselves, you know.
Yeah.
They don't play into this BS of like contracts with the US government, you know. Like we signed into that because we didn't know any better, with a birth certificate, with a marriage certificate, with an SS number, all of that. Like, we didn't know that we were, you know, I didn't know I was marrying the US government when I married my husband. I didn't realize that, but I did.
Yeah.
Lauren, that was like what I was talking to you about through Instagram, like all of this stuff about how your name, they call it, like, even when you do your business title, when you have to get your business, fictitious business title.
Yeah.
Just some made up shit that they want you to bond with them, so that you're this entity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that you're a part deeper into the system. And it's so fascinating once you start going down this route, because honestly, we do, like, in the, you know, quote unquote truth community, sorry, I'm looking for a charging port right now. But when you're kind of going through things that were not taught, and you realize a lot of people were in some sort of secret society, or, you know, L. Ron Hubbard creating his own religion and stuff like that. And you realize, like, it's not just because they were maybe a con artist or whatever. It was more because they realized the big con of the system and how things are set up. And they were like, hey, I'm going to do this too. Mm. That's what they did. And there's no way that they could be stopped. That's what's the funny, ironic part about all of it, is like, hey, if you want, you can make for fermenting fairy religion if you wanted, not have to pay taxes. And
but that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm becoming a ministry.
I love it. That's amazing.
And my faith is nature.
Yeah.
That's my religion, nature. Duh. Like, why aren't we all doing this? Hello.
Right.
Like, crazy. But like, people are doing this, and there's a whole database of, so, like, you know, within probably by the start of next year, I'm assuming that we're going to have like our own doctors, our own nurses, our own farms, our own distributors, our own truckers, like everyone who just wants to stay within the means of the people, the truth seekers. You know, that's who we're going to be shopping with. That's who we're going to be spending our money with.
That's really exciting. I love that. I think maybe you're a bit further ahead in the US, because I guess the pendulum had swung that bit further in terms of maybe how bad things had got in some ways. So it's like you're finding you're ahead on those solutions. I think we're perhaps playing catch up a bit in the UK, but it gives me hope that there's going to be good ultimately to come out of this.
Definitely.
Do you know, I want to ask you, it's great, we're sort of talking about bigger topics. I want to just ask you some specific sort of questions about gut health, going back to that for a minute. I'm sort of conscious, I've got like, I treat a lot of kids with autism. Obviously they have a lot of gut issues. And I'm really interested, you know, what your view is on sensitivity, sort of children taking fermented foods. Like, is it the go, start low, go slow? You know, is there any, what have you seen, I guess, people, children using them, or, you know, in people on the autism spectrum, particularly as they can be prone to histamine issues, which I know you've done a post about that. Yeah, just any advice or what you've seen, what benefits people and how best to take?
Right. So I definitely have, I mean, I'm sure I have a lot of customers with autistic children, but I know of several who, that's all they'll drink. Like, especially my lemonades, they love, like, for some reason, my lemonades are very, very attractive to, sensitive children. you know. But the thing is, like, autistic children, they're so tuned in to energy that they seem to be very attracted to wild fermented foods. And so my experience is that they love my food, and that it really helps them calm their energy because of the gut brain axis. And I think they're tuning into something even finer than that, than the gut brain axis. There's something like energetically that's like, you're like fine tuning the communication networks, you know, from the spirit of the microbes to the spirit of the soul of the person, the child. So it's immense. Like, it's great. I think it's highly recommended to, because autistic children, I think it's like 99% of them will have a dysbiosis in their gut or even a leaky gut. Is that right?
Yeah. I don't know the percentage. I mean, it's huge. And it's so sad because, you know, they just don't really get any help, or it's in the conventional system. You know, my close friend, her little boy at the time, he was 4, and he had cyclical vomiting and, you know, severe gut issues. And when she got him diagnosed and, you know, went to see a gastric specialist, it was just like, oh, well, it's because he's autistic, you know. And that, it angers me so much because they've got this label attached to them that it means that almost anything that physically that they have isn't treated. The gut issues, I mean, it makes a huge impact. You know, if you've got stomach ache, or, you know, if you've got diarrhea, you can't get out of the house, or you're vomiting, you know. And I think anything that they can try to help. Yeah, that.
Also the vagus nerve is really important.
Yeah.
The like overstimulation, oversensitivity. And so there's like the bi-directional, like, so you can actually calm the vagus nerve. You can stimulate the vagus nerve, which will stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system, which will help to calm the child by creating a healthy microbiome. So that's why a lot of autistic children have really good results from eating fermented foods, but they should be wild fermented, and they should not take a probiotic supplement, because that, you know,
that's what I wanted to. Yes. So with the probiotics, I mean, my daughter, she had PANDAS, which is sort of has similarities. No, autism is often misdiagnosed. It's often misdiagnosed as autism, but she did not do well on probiotics. Like, and I was convinced that, you know, when I read the GAPS book, that was going to be our savior, you know, that was going to be how we healed her stomach. She could not get on with them. And then I was like, well, let's heal her gut. So we did lots of bone broths, and then she couldn't cope with that because of the histamine. And I was like, Jesus Christ, you know, how do I, like, nothing that was meant to, even on the alternative health front, the solutions didn't work. You know, that's, we tried homeopathy, and that's obviously what worked for us. But for us, we've still got some gut dysbiosis. So I'm really wanting to try the fermented foods. But what do you say about, just for people listening that perhaps haven't seen your Instagram posts about histamine issues, because that can be a worry, you know, if you do react to histamine, should you try them or not? You did a post recently, which I thought, oh, I should pick that up on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a controversial topic, but I believe that if your body overproduces histamine, then there's something going on. And again, you know, it all comes back to really the gut. So like are you a homeopathist or?
Yeah, homeopath, yeah.
So homeopath, yeah. So that's what I said in my Instagram post, is like putting a little bit of something that will stimulate the body, and then having the body rewrite itself. Yeah. You know, to be very, very helpful. So, and then at the same time, you're balancing your gut, which will ultimately help long-term in terms of histamine tolerance. So like, so what I instruct people to do is take, you can start with kefir, my kefir, or a good, maybe raw dairy kefir, and start very, very, very small. I mean, we're talking like half a teaspoon or so, and take that with food. You know, you're going to take the kefir with food. And so it's all absorbed much better. So you're not like on an empty stomach. And then just work up from there, because what you're going to do with the tiny amounts is you're going to trigger your body, but you're also going to flood your system with healthy bacteria, which will then help to tolerate histamine responses.
Yeah.
I've heard that just from like eating, I've heard just from eating, or, you know, getting some kefir even after a meal, like, let's just say average person eating like shit still, but are starting to get on the path of clean eating. And even though it's maybe not organic and all this stuff, if they actually get some like organic raw cheese or kefir, or, but not pasteurized at all, and no, any type of shelf life, just completely right from source. If you take a little bit at a time and you increase that over the week or 2 weeks, whatever, it's just like anything else. Like, why do we get so, you know, why do we increase the doses of alcohol that people drink? Yeah, I mean, that's because you're little dose by little dose by bigger dose. And eventually you get to a six pack a night for some people. And when really, if they just tapered off for a while, they wouldn't be able to do that at all. Like, they'd just be completely annihilated. And so apparently it's just, you're kind of rebooting your system, like what you said, by just increments small at a time, because it's going to cause symptoms. People act like, oh, this is just going to feel amazing right afterwards, when they're still full of garbage. And so it's kind of like giving a nice eviction notice before it, you know, before you have to one day get the, you know, the FBI thing where they're like slamming the door, you know. I also think, like, because when the kidneys get backed up, the gut gets backed up. When the gut is backed up, it's producing 90% of your neurons, and it can't flush out fluids, and fluids coagulated end up causing conditions like phlegm, turns into all these other things that are congestive lung and chest areas, right? And your lymph nodes get swollen, which is your drainage system, and you can't drain properly. So when people are going through other, it's not just one thing. There's food allergies, then there's also the allergies that you're around, the climate that you're in, the imposing forces of your body having to find why it's inflation, you know, inflamed. And just to kind of solidify, like, for people that maybe are still wanting to talk themselves into trying this, this is a basic thing that people now have to get convinced of. Like, you need double blind placebo studies to prove that, you know, fermented foods, and, you know, basically just eating predominantly, you know, if you like to convince people of organic is really ridiculous. You're like, come on, people. There was not even a time before a certain time where you had to justify whether it was or wasn't, because it was.
Well, that's it. Exactly. There was no such term as organic when I was younger, because everything was organic.
Yeah. You didn't need it. You didn't need to decipher, right?
Right. And it just, when you think about it clearly, when you listen back to this podcast, for anyone that's listening, digest it little bits at a time, like what she's saying about the probiotic or the prebiotic. And I guess, can you touch upon prebiotics and, like, you know, green bananas and why that's important, instead of letting it go through the other end of the process where it just gets sugar filled? And
I haven't heard of this, but my youngest daughter will only eat green bananas.
Oh no. Okay.
If I get bananas when they're green, she'll eat them, she loves them, and then she won't touch them when they start to go yellow.
Oh, so my 2-year-old son is all about it now.
Oh, that's fun. Oh, that's amazing. So green bananas are resistant starch, so basically they're indigestible fibers that we can't digest. Like, we don't have the enzymes to digest them. And so the only thing that can digest them is our microbiome, our microbes. So they become food for the microbes. And then once they munch and turn it into sugar, and then they start proliferating into the millions, billions, and trillions, then you have a healthy microbiome. So again, like I was going back to the probiotic supplements, they don't have prebiotics, right? But we can eat prebiotics in our diet, like a green banana.
Right.
And that'll feed the probiotics. And then we just end up with like a very diverse, abundant microbiome. So it's good to get some resistance starch in there. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that. I love that.
That was something that she taught me about. I was like, that makes so much sense. And
yeah, green banana is my favorite prebiotic, because the other prebiotics are so like gaseous forming. But usually like the green banana, most people can tolerate. So
right. I like it.
Do you, Lauren, like with your, you know, you've obviously had to do a lot of work to heal your gut. What's your diet like now? Do you have like, do you have like this perfect, you know, I often wonder like when people are completely healed, we should all eat perfectly in an ideal world, but we're all human. Like, do you
what is a perfect diet though? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, what, that's so true. But what, I mean, are you allowed to let things slip? Like, what does it look like now? You know?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Like I can, but the thing is like, you know, let's say like what most people think of letting things slip is like having a piece of cake or having a cookie or something, right? Like that. But I don't want that. I have no craving for sugar anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's because I changed my microbiome. Mm-hmm. It's just I changed the flora in it and I don't crave sugar anymore. Yeah. So for me, letting things go a little bit is like, dairy ice cream or French fries soaked in gravy and cheese, you know, poutine. I'm married to a person from Montreal. And so we eat poutine all the time. So yeah, and now I can eat gluten. I can pretty much eat anything I want if I want to, which, you know, I still care a lot for my body. And even though I can tolerate a lot of things, that doesn't mean that I would ingest those things, you know?
Let me say this. So that's why it's so, I think, important to, when you're going through the process, to try to see the bigger picture on where you're at and like where you started, and consistently compare and contrast for yourself, because when you're on the path, like certain foods are great for getting you out of the bullshit, because you're always trying to not be who you once were for the negative, right? Like, well, at least I'm not there, but I'm right here now. But even right here is not maybe a good resting spot. So then you're always down the path. Well, certain foods are great. Like they're great microbials naturally, like, you know, garlic, and eating like very potent forms of, you know, that's an anti-inflammatory. So it's going to help your gut, right? Naturally. But sometimes, like when you're going through a part in your journey where maybe you've already leveled up from that, you don't necessarily just need to constantly throw that fire in the pot. So like there's misconceptions, and I guess it might be why people get hooked on certain things, like apple cider vinegar, for instance, right? Where it might be a good way to accelerate getting out of that sticky spot that you're in and try to help flush out everything. But it's not something that you want to just, once you're out of the woods of it, to just continuously just keep dumping in the system, because you're ruining the gut flora. Just like distilled water, you know, it's great for helping flush out the stuff that your body's not processing quick enough. But then once you get to a point, you're like just stripping all the nutrients from your body, and you have to have nutrients maintaining itself now, because you're past that point. Yeah. So that's why like certain, you know, even things that are foundationally true, they're just not true for the moment that you're in. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all an ebb and flow. It's, you know, you have to stay flexible. So someone who's like a strict vegan or a strict carnivores, like, I don't know, I don't label myself. So
right, they're missing the point. They're,
yeah, I'm
yeah,
Yeah, I might need a ton of veggies at one point in my life. Right. I might need a ton of meat. I don't know. Like, it's really up to my body what I need.
Right. We're starting to do the same thing where we're putting labels upon everything. Like, now we went so far down this rabbit hole that you have to say it's organic and non-GMO and kosher and all these other things. And you have to state that, you know, you see what I'm saying? It's like, we're starting to do that too, because we got initiated into this club we didn't know we're in and ushered down the road that we didn't know we were on until you get on, you know, until you find out, oh wait, you know, where are we going with this thing?
Yeah.
Listening to your body, I think. But you're, do you know what, you're right though, once you get off certain foods, like I stopped eating gluten a while back when my daughter was healing her stomach, and I thought, I'm just going to do it with her, you know, just to take up. And I felt so bloody good when I didn't eat gluten. Yeah, I was like, Jesus, I didn't realize it was, you know, I thought it was normal to be bloated after every meal because I used to live on pasta. And I was like, you know, I didn't feel bloated or anything. And I thought, I don't actually want to eat that again. You know, I can eat the odd bit, but I don't want to. That's the thing. I think when you realize what actually feels good for your body and what doesn't, it's like you don't necessarily want to start eating cake and loads of sugar, you know, once you've been off of it and you feel good for it.
And something I wanted to bring up to you, Lauren, is, something that Lisa and I talked about separately, and that I've kind of talked about a lot with my clients, because I've been a personal trainer is how I started out, yoga instructor, and I've gotten into a lot of, you know, essentially my own research through Ayurveda. I've learned about the Gerson therapy. I've learned about fermented foods, like a lot of these different things. And it starts to come together in this thing. But essentially what I've been able to intrinsically prove amongst everyone else kind of talking about it, because it's a nice hot topic, but the reductionist approach of healing, like stop throwing things into the pot, start pulling things out and seeing what is causing the issue, which is true terrain theory, which is true Ayurveda, excuse me. And when you take that approach, a lot of it comes down to fasting, like allowing your body to digest what hasn't already, and to flush out what it knows doesn't need to exist. And just by, you know, that's why it's not even just in medical modern day, you know, it has to be documented, because that's why they have every person fast before a surgery or a procedure, is so that, you know, something that's hasn't gotten processed, you know, if you start having a reaction, they don't want you to choke on the table and die, or like to, you know, vomit it up and choke on it, right? But also when you think about it, it's because it makes so much sense. You're just allowing the body to flush out what it hasn't processed yet. And most people, they have this massive timetable that they're eating in, where it's like waking to literally the ending of their day, instead of having a condensed timetable where you're allowing your body to wake up off its own energy and then kind of close down with the energy that you put in it, because you are eating within a much shorter timetable. So essentially, you're just giving the body time to process what it needs to find the balance, the next action. And in doing so, you allow your body to breathe. And one of the things too, I don't know if you've probably thought about it like this, but it's so funny that we don't think about how the breath is literally the first form of nutrition. So why wouldn't we amplify that every morning before consuming anything else, like not even water first? Consuming the breath, amplifying your chi, your prana, your life force, the thing that we're connected to, right? Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you start to realize like how it all even works, where it is kind of like this ebb and flow, the wave pulling back, pushing in. And it every time you do that, you can kind of level out the next choice you're going to make. So you wouldn't be just like gripping a coffee cup or whatever, where it's just going to dry you out anyways right away. And trust me, I still like coffee every now and then, but it's one of those things where, you know, you realize these bigger, I guess I would just say like circuits that we get caught in, where that's the levels of energy that you're seeking first, because you're on this constant loop of the last choice you made. And, you know, you kind of becoming conscious and your body's like, man, we need to make another choice. Well, this is familiar. Let's do that. So just starting out with the breath and then starting out with some water and allow yourself to kind of wake up off those things first. And then when you're ready to start that cycle, know that, you know, when you go to bed, it wasn't even a day. It's not even like 10 hours usually for people of not eating something until they eat something again, which is just insane. Like, how much food do you need, dude? Mm-hmm. You know, we're just filling up the tank and most people aren't even using it. So allowing like a reduction approach to heal the body so that it kind of can flush out what you have too much of and what it needs for nourishment. So I don't know. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I think it's beautiful to start the morning with a breath. I mean, with deep breathing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And less is more, I think, definitely with eating. Yeah. We way over consume. I feel better for trying to take longer between meals, you know, not eating. I mean, we're told, again, it's the inverted world we live in. We're told 3 meals a day, get, you know, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. We're actually,
right.
If you skip it, you get that kind of natural intermittent fasting anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the inverted world I think we live in. I'm really conscious of time, actually. We're running over. So I just want to make sure, like, before we wrap up, whether, Lauren, what you're up to, you know, what plans you've got. You've got to turn your business into a PMA, which is exciting. You know, what we haven't covered that if you want anyone, the listeners, to know about, anything we haven't touched on.
Let's see. Becoming a PMA, and then... I think the next big thing is releasing a do-it-yourself sourdough bread starter kit, whatever you want to call it. But I created a package. Well, I created a recipe that is that has a very strong starter. So it's fermented for several days. And then I add my kefir to the dough. And then we create a sourdough from that. And it's been really tremendous for people who, I sent it to 6 of my customers who cannot tolerate gluten. And they've tolerated this bread really well without any reaction.
Amazing.
So,
that's really
So I'm excited about that. That should be in about a month or so coming out. So it's a do-it-yourself. I'm going to give you the starter, the flour, the organic flour with einkorn, and you know, whatever, the recipe, of course, a video recipe, and then you can do it on your own. So yeah,
I love that, because that people miss, that's the one thing I miss, actually. The only thing I miss is, you know, that freshly baked bread.
So. Oh, there's nothing like it, you know, nothing like it.
Well, that's excellent. And people that want to find out more about you, and what's the best place to get in touch if they've got questions or if they just want to find out more, where should they go?
Instagram, you can do fermenting.fairy. Sorry, I have a puppy who's chewing on wires right now.
Oh, cute. Not cute the wires, but cute the puppy.
I know.
But can we see the puppy?
Can you see? Yeah. Cash, come here. Cash, look.
Oh,
what's up, pup?
Where's my kitty? Sorry, it's a little mess over here.
Oh, so sweet.
They don't quite get along yet, so I have to like be the boundary between them.
You're like, and here's my pain. You're like, come to me, jungle, like on Ace Ventura, you know? All the animals start coming in.
Fermenting.fairy
Instagram, and then my website is fermentingfairy.com.
Excellent. And I am definitely going to order some stuff, like, even if the shipping's extortionate, you know, I want to try it. So maybe I'll have to like put in a group order or something.
That would be good. Yeah, send me an email and I'll get shipping quotes for you guys, and hopefully I can get them reasonable. Yeah.